Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents... The Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, and I tell you, I'm not to bring you know, everybody into a downer per se, but I just
good morning, Mr. Bick. How are you today? Before we start, I just wanted to say Ed Mulger was a trainer that while I was betting races at Playfair and in the Northwest, but specifically at Playfair in my hometown, that Ed Mulger was a trainer that you always, I mean, for myself, I always respected in terms of, like, if you'd liked a horse in a race and he was running somebody else, you really wanted to take a look at that horse. Or if you were, like, playing the double back in the days when all we had was win, place, show, and the $2 early daily double, if he had a horse running in that double and you didn't want to really leave him out, particularly Ed's horses often outran their prices. He was one of those trainers that you talked about value. You got good value with Ed Mulger horses. So he's just done a terrific job. Stiletto Boy speaks for himself what he's been able to accomplish, really. So, and the other big news this morning here at in Southern California, Cave Rock had his first workout of the season, 4 furlongs and a crisp 47.80. So that's very, very important. And one of the important aspects of that is that he did not begin with a 3 furlong drill, that he was already ready to go 4 furlongs. So that is quite noteworthy as well.
Well, that is a first step. I mean, it probably has got plenty of catching up to do, but we'll monitor that. And of course, what are we, the 13th of February. So we're 2 weeks essentially away from the distribution of the, you know, the Derby intended out of the barn, John.
That's right. So we'll see how that all shakes out, which is going to be very, very important, too, just to see which horses go down that road and which trainers they go to. So, you know, that's going to be huge this year. But, you know, I was beginning to really wonder about Cave Rock in terms of, you know, we're getting awfully late in the ball game here for somebody to not even have a recorded workout. And so that's just really big, big news today. And, you know, I mean, I remember American Pharoah, he hit the work tab in early February and was able to go on and sweep the Triple Crown. So, you know, we're right on the border to where there would, I think, still be some hope here. I mean, we're in the situation with a horse like a Cave Rock where there's no margin for error. I mean, he's got to have everything go, you know, have not even a slight hiccup. But that's big today because we know he's a very talented horse. He was 2-5 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And even losing, he certainly didn't disgrace himself. He lost to Fort Forte. And Fort Forte is right now generally regarded as the Kentucky Derby favorite. He was the favorite in the Kentucky Derby future wager that closed on Sunday. And I did make three wagers in that Kentucky Derby future wager. I played Go Rocket Ride. This is a case where I kind of bent my own rules a little bit. I typically would want 30, 40 to 1. He was 25. But sometimes you just want to support a horse, and I do. I think this is a very intriguing horse. He ran so big in his debut, and I don't think he was even remotely cranked by Mandela. And the fact that Mandela said, we're going to run him in the San Felipe, it reminds me very much of Omaha Beach, of how Mandela off the maiden win in the slot for Omaha Beach sent him to Arkansas and ran him in the Rebel against Game Winner. So would you see Mandela do something like this, that off a debut win in a sprint go directly to a mile and a 16th important three-year-old race like this? That's telling me this could be a special colt, and the breeding's there, Candy Ride. So, and then I put some money on King's Barns from the Pletcher Barn at 36-1 because I sure thought he looked terrific yesterday at Tampa Bay. I think there's a tremendous upside with King's Barns, and that price is okay, 36-1. And then the third horse I played was Practical Move at a nice 83-1. I put a couple of hundred on him at that price.
Look at you.
Because I'm going to, you know, one of the things, there are certain people I have a lot of respect for. One of them, Steve Haskin. Haskin has him ranked fourth on his Kentucky Derby rankings as of last week. I haven't seen his rankings for this week yet. I checked this morning and they're not up yet. But this Practical Move, you know, Steve makes, when you read Steve's reasoning for having that colt ranked so high from the Timiac Team Barn, you know, it's interesting. 83-1, that's the kind of price.
Yeah, that's what you want.
That's what you're looking for in these future moves. And on top of that, Practical Move, just the other day, a Saturday, a Bullet Drill, 59-1, fifth, best of 49. So, boy, it looks to me like he's going in the right direction for sure. And as I say, that's the right kind of price. Now, I was also interested going into the future wager, possibly putting some money on Hoosier Philly, but I knew that was going right out the window when I first checked the odds on Friday, and she was like 8 or 9-1 or something. She closed at 11. She was 50 on the morning line. And, you know, I mean, I was willing to maybe if she was 30, 40, something like that, she probably is not running in the Derby, but she looks so freakishly talented that I would have put a few dollars on her at a big price. But there's no way I'd be putting anything on her at 11-1.
No, it that was I referenced made a hint when I said, you know, we would go over the numbers and that came out of the future wager, and that was one of the crazy. Let's see her. She's got to face the likes of Vava and Chop Chop on Saturday in the Rachel and others. This is one of those hype scenarios, and I believe me, I'm rooting for Amos and would love her to be, you know, a super special and as successful as the, you know, the best ones that Tom's had, and he's had good ones. And for him to say, you know, last year, before she ever ran, he said at Saratoga, before she'd ever started, and said, you know, this may be the best filly I've ever had. Okay. I mean, that seemed like a you know, pretty bold statement, and okay, so far so good, but wow. I mean, to take 11-1 on her, it for the Derby? Seriously?
Oh, I like I say, it is crazy. I mean, you know, like I say, I was interested if she was a really big prize,
yeah,
to roll the dice, but I mean, she's a long shot to be in the field.
Yeah, exactly.
Win the race. So, you know, it's crazy. Now that the cross country on Saturday, I did pop back in. I like it when there's more stakes, but I did one of the main reasons I hopped in on Saturday was I did think that first leg looked very solid to single, and Webslinger got the job done at 6-5. I also singled the second leg. So that's gives you so much spread elsewhere. And that single won Southern Horse at 9-5. Then I went all, and then I used five horses in the fourth at Santa Anita and caught the 2-1 second favorite. I caught a 2-1 winner using all. So those are two situations where I could have caught a much bigger price, but it didn't fall that way. But that's one reason you play these, is because, you know, if you keep knocking on the door, one of these days the door opens and you catch somebody where you get a 20-1, 30-1, something like that winner in a race where you've used all or you've spread and used five. And then in that last leg, I used three at Gulfstream and hit it with the Yes, I Am Free. So it was a $120 ticket. And as chalky as it was, I mean, it paid $667. So gee, that's going to keep me playing that. Now, I didn't play it yesterday because they took the turf races off and put them on the tapetas. I said, well, that's okay. I'll just sit out this cross country. So I played the late pick five at Santa Anita instead. And this is another one of those examples, Steve, of where I'm getting a little better at this kind of save situation. I was alive going into the last leg of the pick five, the Lady of Shamrock Stakes, and I singled the filly that's made me so much money in her first two starts in this country, the Wild Grazer. My ticket was $162, and the Wild Grazer was going to pay $1,500. So I'm alive for $1,500, and there were two fillies I was really scared of in the race. TN Conversation and AG Bullet. Brad Free's best bet of the day was TN Conversation, and I thought that filly certainly merited a lot of respect. And that AG Bullet just ran such a super race last time out. And she was stretching out for Papa Bedromo, and that looked like there's a lot of talent there. And so I decided, should I save by putting some money on TN Conversation and AG Bullet, or just put maybe even more money to save with AG Bullet? So I put a couple of hundred on AG Bullet. When I made the bet, she was 5-2, and she ended up going off at 2-1. So I lost some money there with the odds drop. But still, even though my $162 ticket went down, I was able to cash there on a winner that pays $640 and have a couple of hundred on her. So I ended up showing a profit on the deal. So that was another situation where just kind of being alert of what your payoff is and maybe hedge a little bit and turn what would have been a loss into at least something of a profit.
Well, you did a bunch of things here, John, with this. For starters, let me dial back to the future wager. And for those that were wondering, you included the Cave Rock conversation. Among the Baffert horses that you would expect to get transferred, obviously Cave Rock, Arabian Knight, coming off the performance at Oaklawn. There's a couple that haven't won necessarily, but you'd have to expect would find their way to another barn to garner points and so forth. That includes what? National Treasure, certainly.
Yep.
Reincarnate.
Yep.
As well. Not sure where things stand with Ajazi, even off the win, but he turned back for that maiden win, and they're probably going to try to stretch him back out. Having a meltdown, I imagine, will continue to sprint. So I suppose he stays put, right?
Yep.
And then there's the likes of what? There's Fort Bragg. There's Carmel Road.
Austin.
Right. Worcester. And Hard to Figure.
Yep.
Those are all eligible to be transferred around.
That's right. All candidates that could end up elsewhere. That's right.
All right. Then when it came to the sequence, and I just want to turn to my how I approached it, since you brought it up on Saturday. I actually had a miscue in that leg with Web Slinger. It wasn't going to matter because I tried to single. Was it in the fourth race? I think it was in the fourth race at Santa Anita. The horse that finished third, I tried to single. Give me, John, who am I thinking of?
Let's see. I'm not quite sure.
I've got it. Hold on. I've got it here, too. I tried, which was really... There, here we go. Here's Gulfstream and Santa Anita. I keep them together. Here we go.
Jetovator, maybe? Or?
No. It was, I tried to single Crypto Ride, the Craig Lewis, who finished third. And Army Star, to me, Army Star was the other horse. And if I had gone deeper, but anyway, it didn't matter. But it was a sequence. It was certainly a sequence worth attacking, and I love these, and they tied together the three stakes at Tampa with Oaklawn and the Withers, and that was a nice one too, and that paid well.
Well, they're really catching on, and like I say, considering that on Saturday, you're looking at, in that coast to coast, 6-5, 9-5, 2-1, 2-1 and 3-1. And it pays $667 yeah. for a buck. Now, yeah. one of the things that really I think is good about that coast to coast is the $1 aspect. It's not a 20 cent. It's not even a 50 cent, but it's not a $2 too. So I certainly like the fact that was the one thing that I always did. It was rough on anybody that wasn't really wealthy playing the pick six in the days where you had the regular pick six with the consolation that I like so much that saved my bacon many times when you didn't get the six, but you got two or three or four or five sure. consolations. And man, I'm telling you, that was big for me. But when you set out your ticket and then after you lay out all your horses, you have to go times two because it's a $2 wager. That was always kind of a tough one to swallow, like I say, unless you just had a huge, bankroll. And so I like the dollar in that it's going to pay better than those 50-cent wagers, but you're not having to go that extra mile for the $2 and make such an expensive ticket. And so often then when it's a $2 pick six, you're having to chop off horses that you end up regretting you chopped off, and they end up winning. So
now that's the challenge. I mean, balancing the expense versus the anticipated or the degree of difficulty. You can get a read on the sequence and you make that decision. I mean, Saturday, obviously the Suncoast upset, the Jerry Bennett filly Dreaming of Snow, was going to guarantee that the New York based Cross Country was going to pay. It paid $18,732 for that, that ended with Litigate. I'll make this point. Even when you don't hit these, the exercise of looking at races that you might not otherwise have looked at, that's also, part of the appeal of this. And I bring that up because I don't think I was going to look at that eighth race at Oaklawn if I hadn't made an attempt at this sequence. I mean, I had already obviously I was at Tampa and we heavily invested in the Tampa sequence. The Withers, the Withers was a pretty clear and easy race to include. So now you got to look at the race from Oaklawn, and I actually ended up with a nice score and sniffing out a horse, Jackman, the Munnings gelding for Broberg in End Zone, that paid $28, and that's a race that I never would have looked at or bet otherwise.
Well, that's a really good point. I mean, that's really a great point. And yesterday in that pick five, Skinner was a very hard horse for me in making the morning line. I made him five, and he was a horse that off a back-to-back grade one starts, but he's coming off a layoff, and he was pretty drilled in those grade ones. I mean, he did run third in the Del Mar Futurity, but it was a well-beaten third. I know that Sheriff's has always liked this Curlin colt. His best buyer going into yesterday was a 79, so he's not going to, get a bunch of money from the speed figure players. And he ended up going off at 3-1, so he did get some play. But he's a horse I made five. I wouldn't have been surprised if he went off at 8 or 10 off his form. And, boy, he ran a terrific race. I mean, got a 95 buyer, won by a little over three lengths with Victor Espinoza aboard. And, man, I think as someone who has played all others in pools 1, 2, and 3 of the Churchill Kentucky Derby future wager, he's the kind of horse that you like hopping into the picture here at this point, because certainly hasn't been included as an individual horse in any of those pools. I didn't hop into the all others this time because I think we're late enough in, close enough to the Derby that now they have a much better opportunity to have the right horses in the individual field. Now, of course, you still get those Babbitt horses, all those ones that you articulated. And that's the twist we have this year with this, that you're getting the Baffert horses. And of course, as you say, then with the next pool in March, we're going to find out, those horses that have been switched, they'll end up in that individual pool. So, and another thing that's been really great is expanding it to the 40 total betting interests. This has been our huge plus for playing this, because you're getting better prices even on the individual horses, that's for sure, with so many more horses available to bet on.
Well, the Oaks pool will be the next one, and I've told the story a bunch of times, driving back and Saturday night, Tina's driving, we leave after Derby, I look at my account and there's like $900 more than I expected. And I'm like, where the hell did this come from? And it was because I had, I had bet an Oaks future that I had completely forgotten about. And in fact, it was the Boo Boo Clark include Betty, and I was like, I'm saying to myself, where did this come from? And I had to poke around my account to, you know, go look at my bets. And I was like, oh, my God, I completely, one of those things where you completely forget you would bet. And it's like finding a bag of money in the street.
How was this? That's one of my favorite stories of yours. And every time you tell it, I just love it. Because that has happened to me a couple of times, too, where a future bet or something to where, and you click into your account and you go, what?
Yeah.
What? And then you have to scratch your head and investigate, yeah. And then you find out, oh, yeah, I guess I did that. And what a pleasant surprise.
I love it. The other, let me slip in, John. You mentioned Ag Bullet, Papa Padromo, and Frankie Dettori. And Dettori, the first opportunity for him to sweep the weekend stakes, because, of course, he was aboard Manhattan Jungle to win the Sweet Life for Michael W. McCarthy. And, you know, that was a spot. That was a fun race. And I don't put out the spot plays all that often like I did on Saturday. But again, part of it was, you know, looking at the coast to coast. And of course, we're going to handicap, you know, the hammer. You know, we talked about the Sweet Life on Friday going in. But Ragtime Rose was one of those horses that absolutely jumped off the page at me, John. That classic turn back to a sprint distance. I mean, it's an elongated sprint, obviously, coming down the hill. But Ragtime Rose, it was pretty obvious what Mullins' thoughts were with this horse. And I just pretty much keyed everything through her. And, you know, Manhattan Jungle was too good and wins at a tick under 6-5. But I even, you know, I hooked the two of them up with three horses, and even caught the 5-1 third place finisher. The try paid $230
with an even money shot.
It's unbelievable. And but it, again, it's you know, finding a price and keying them and you know, building the ticket through them. So even though Ragtime Rose fell a little short, Hector Berrios, and I tell you, Hector Berrios and Mullins right now, you got to clean your glasses every time you look at a race with them. You know, and I'm not somebody that's just sort of an auto use for hot jocks and hot trainers and whatnot. But, I mean, they're in a nice groove right now.
Well, those Mullins horses have been firing. In fact, I mean, he came close to winning both stakes, having to settle for second with Ragtime Rose and second with the Wild Grazer. And Dettori, this guy, that's why I decided to put the 200 on the Saver, because when it's Dettori, that guy is riding. I mean, and he has said, I wish I'd come to Santa Anita many years ago in the winter. This guy is just riding so brilliantly right now. I mean, particularly on the grass, but even on the dirt. And I mean, it's such a pleasure to watch him. At the, you know, and it, look, he's in the twilight. This isn't like he's in his prime. He's in the twilight of his career, which shows you what he was in his prime.
Sure.
But, you know, at Ragtime Rose, you know, you've been talking from time to time about gallop outs this morning, and a lot of people turn up their nose at that. But I'm telling you, it's something to look at. Not to overemphasize, but it is something to look at. At Ragtime Rose, I have a note. I'm looking at my program page right here. One of the few notes, excuse me, that I made on the card Saturday, Ragtime Rose finished willingly inside for good second, galloped out past winner. And that's important to note because they're sprinting down the hill there. And Ragtime Rose very likely could stretch out next time out. And that is indicative that stretching out will not be a negative for her. You know, it'll be a positive for her.
I don't know. I don't know, John. You know, she off the maiden win. Mullins tried the Jimmy Durante, and she arrived late. Same in the Blue Norther. You know, she really never got involved. She's a closing sprinter, and you know, as Jay Privman has taught for years, when it comes to this, when you've got a horse like this, you think to yourself, oh, you know, this horse is probably wants two turns. They don't. They want that quick pace in front of them, and they close into it. When you put them in a two turn race, the pace is slower, and they don't have the same punch.
That's a very good point.
It's a sprint filler.
We're talking about a 2 year old turning three. That is turn three, and so we're still not exactly fixated on what she is exactly.
True, that's fair.
I'm not saying you're wrong, because you could very well be right. There's no question about it. She could be best as a late running sprinter and really mediocre, you know, as a two-turn horse. But this is why watching what she did after the race, because, man, the reason this is important to me and why I made note of it is because Manhattan Jungle looks like a very good filly here.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe the best 3-year-old filly we have on the grass. She looks like a Going Global type to me. And so the fact that she looks that good, and this filly, she didn't just kind of gallop by her. She galloped out nicely right past her. Now, again, you don't want to overemphasize that, because you don't know if Dettori, you know, just kind of really eased up on Manhattan Jungle after the finish, or if that filly, you know. So there's tremendous context that needs to be taken into account. And your point about her possibly just being a late running sprinter absolutely could be true. But the fact that she did gallop out, is I did make note of that, because it's something to just file away, because you forget about that. And I make a long list of these. And so the next time I have to sit there and make the morning line, and if she does happen to pop into a two-turn race, I'm certainly going to give her a little more, not a lot, but a little more consideration than I might have otherwise.
Well, and as we wrap up, I should also note, you know, she's out of Corderosa, making her a half to Laneway, you know, who pretty much is a blueprint for, you know, for the downhill, and right, just won the Clocker's Corner the other day.
That's right. Well, and of course, Ragtime Rose's Dam is by Aldebaran, who was he was late running, a very good sprinter. So, like you say, I mean, but you know, you got the Union Rags on top and Dixie Union, so you know, there's the possibilities of some stamina there. But like I say, it's just something I filed away to keep in mind if she does happen to. And maybe Mullins will come to the same conclusion and won't even stretch her out for the immediate future. So, but if he does happen to do that, at least I have a little additional information to take into consideration.
Well, John always has plenty of information, and he grinds it all up and regurgitates it, and that Corderosa, David Donk trained for his longtime clients, DeLeo and Punk, and I vaguely can recollect her, and she was okay. She got, I think she had her career abbreviated, Corderosa, but she was also a sprint type. So that's an interesting. The downhill has become my favorite thing, and I certainly hope that you know, the circumstance that saw it decorated my life claimed, you know, critically injured, and I hope that does not create a new issue regarding the hill course. I mean, because
you speak about the hillside course, and it's pretty much everybody's favorite. I mean, when I first came to Santa Anita as a fan in 1977, watching a race down the hill, one of the biggest thrills really in my entire racing life. It was just thrilling to watch that. And I'm so disappointed that the Breeders' Cup turf sprint.
Yeah.
I'm scratching my head over that. I mean, you have this wonderful course that has worked beautifully for the Breeders' Cup in the past. And why you would not utilize it and instead have a very abbreviated Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, I'm very perplexed.
Yeah, I think what transpired here is, and what happened a few years ago with the Miller runner, I think that they, you know, they're seeking to avoid a potential issue. That's it. I mean, there's no other conclusion really to draw. So, all right, John, this was great. I appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week. I'll still be in New Orleans, so we'll have a big weekend to recap when we talk next Monday.
Well, looking forward to that Risen Star and the Risen Star card, and have a good trip there to New Orleans. What a just tremendous city that is, and I remember going there for HRTV, being there for the Louisiana Derby, and people were asking me, are you excited about the Louisiana Derby? I said, yes, I am, but I'm more excited about seeing this filly run in the Oaks. Her name, Rachel Alexander.
There you go. Well, the Rachel came up very good. This is with Hoosier Filly and Chop Chop and Vava, and going to be a very good lead-in to the 14-horse Risen Star. John White, everybody. Post time, John, on your Twitter machine. Let's turn on to the final opportunity of the NFL season to talk to Dave Hill, and we'll get Dave's final thoughts. It really the job he's done for us and for you as listeners has just been unbelievable. And I bear with me for 1 second as I take care of a separate concern, and not a concern, but a something I've got to handle here. Ugh, I'll tell you what. Yeah. There we go. All right. How many things can I do at once is the question, right? That's, well, that should do it. All right. All right, Dave Hill joining us here momentarily, and we'll see how he fared. I'm going to guess he did okay, and you know, there were a few good ones, right? Didn't Rich Eng, I gave you those plays of Rich, right? He liked Gainwell over 18. Here's Dave Hill now, and Dave, you rode your system and your approach home to finish the season on a plus. Congratulations, and thanks for just a phenomenal 4.5 months.
Steve, it's a tough day today. I can't figure out how to get my wallet to close with all this money in it.
You
sitting lopsided in my chair here.
What did you end up doing? I know you were waiting out a few of the props. Lay out your card the way it unfolded yesterday.
Well, I was trying to grade the props I gave you guys last week, and I can't remember which ones I got to talk about, because I know we got cut short while I was going through the list, but I did go on the Unabated show Saturday night, and I gave out Sky Moore anytime touchdown, which cash, so I was pretty happy about that. That was a big one.
What was that plus?
Plus 900.
Wow.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the handicap there was just that that the coverage would be heavily, you know, schemed towards Kelsey, and that would open up these other receivers, which, you know, Andy Reid plays by committee, you know, receiver by committee here. And it worked. I mean, that's exactly what happened in that play where Sky scored that touchdown. So I was happy to cash that one. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that was a little bit weird about the props was that I told you guys last week that, like, oh, if you wait till game time, you know, you'll get a better price on unders. And one of the unders I really liked were the Mahomes unders, but they never really got, they never got bet up because I think the public was all kind of handicapping that the unknown about his injury would, you know, make the under a smart play there. So the numbers actually went the wrong direction. So I ended up betting the unders and still cash. You still cashed if you bet the under, but you, you know, the numbers didn't move the way I thought they would. So I did pretty good on under, his receiving yards, his attempts. And then I bet some overs that I think I gave on your show that cashed. I mean, the McKinnon overs were great for me. Over 2.5 receptions, over 29.5 yards. I cashed pretty good on those. The ones that I really missed on that I gave you a show were the long shot props, you know, the things like Pacheco over 3.5 receptions, which would think is like a +400 prop. You know, those I just got to bet a little there, so I didn't lose much, but we did pretty good on the props. The numbers came out right. And but I really got brought home there by that Sky Moore touchdown.
Wow. Well, and you know, that 900, that when you say that, you're making me realize, I think, wasn't Gainwell first score, wasn't that +950?
Yeah, that was +950. Yeah. I don't remember exactly where. I mean, I'm not sure where it closed, but I saw it Saturday night because somebody gave that out on the show.
Well, and I mean, to fall literally an elbow short there, I mean, that's a heartbreaker, and that's a difference maker.
Of course. I mean, that was nuts. I mean, I thought he was in, and then they kept, you know, then they showed the clip where you see his elbow clearly hit, and I thought, here we go. It's going to be another one of these Super Bowls with lots of replays and, you know, deliberations.
Well, that's for sure. And in terms, actually, you bring that up, and that bears a question. What obviously there's winners and losers on each side, but for instance, the Devontae Smith overturn, which to me was preposterous. I mean, I even as a Mammoth Eagle fan, I don't think, I mean, I think I saw plenty of people say, I got no dog in the fight, but I mean, that one was excruciating. But there's those kinds of things that are going to cost people, that take a reception away and take those yards. What was it, 40? It was a 40-yarder.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I can't understand why we like football so much. You know, it's the rule book in this sport is so big and changes every year, and there's nothing more agonizing than having to wait while a team of lawyers in New York City, you know, pour over video and debate with each other over whether or not, you know, what constitutes control and what constitutes, you know, motion and where the plane is. I mean, it's bananas, and it drives me crazy every single time. And I don't care which, you know, like you're saying, doesn't matter what side of the bet you're on or which team you're rooting for. Sometimes it's just like, if it looks like a catch, it's a catch. I mean, whether it's being bobbled or whatever, if someone goes out of bounds, I just feel like if the ball's in the person's hands, you know, to me that feels like that's good enough.
And I just reached for the one of my prop sheets, and Devonta Smith was basically over everything, right? 7 receptions, 100 yards, and I had him at 64 and a half. I think it might have been Rich Eng. Was it Rich Eng that the Miles Sanders under was a smart play?
Yeah, I had Miles Sanders under 61.5, and I cashed that one. But I also bet Miles Sanders over a half a reception because I just kind of felt like there would be, and I think I get on your show where I thought there'd be a, you know, some sort of like screen pass drawn up for him at some point, but that just never happened. So I lost on that one.
Well, luckily, he was targeted, and he had the you know, the pop that might have been a second returned touchdown. Turnover. I mean, what would that have, those kinds of things, by the way, some of the oddballs like a missed field goal, right? A 2-point mm-hmm. conversion. What other esoterica came to pass?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like the most interesting thing was the fumble the Hurts fumble for a touchdown. And it was interesting to me because I was just poring over some of the stats this morning. And, you know, when Football Outsiders did their sort of DVOA breakdown of the game, it was incredibly lopsided for Kansas City, which is shocking. Even they were even shocked by how the numbers came out, because watching the game, it felt so close. But then when you really look at it, that fumble touchdown just put the Eagles right back on the field, and then they ran back down and scored. And it just took a lot of plays away from it kept Kansas City's offense off the field for that much longer, right? I mean,
yes.
When Kansas City's offense was on the field, they were incredibly efficient, but they just weren't on the field as much as the Eagles. And so that's part of why the eyeball test makes it seem like the Eagles are crushing or the Eagles are doing so much better, because it's sort of psychologically, we discount that single weird play that turned into a touchdown for the Chiefs, when most touchdowns require a long drive and all these plays we see put together that get the 7 points. So that was a weird one that I think kind of skewed the eye test for a lot of us watching the game.
And you know, it's funny you said that, because I thought the exact same thing. I thought, all right, well, let's go score and, you know, let's eat up another 7 minutes. My man Johnny D sent me a note. You know, the Eagles did what they needed to do from a time of possession standpoint. And let me see this number, because I don't know if you've seen, I've been sending you these things all week. You're probably relieved the season is over. You won't have to see any more of these from me. Where is it? Teams that lost, that had time of possession under 26 minutes, were 1-22 straight up going into last night.
Right. I mean, the problem with this, the reason the Eagles break those stats is because Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, you know, they get four downs. They're not three and out.
That's
right.
Good point.
So, like, this is a team that I think a lot of these kind of advanced stats can't figure out, because a lot of advanced stats think that if you fail on third down, that counts against your EPA numbers, but not the Eagles, because they get, they go for, I mean, they were under, you know, they converted all three of their fourth downs. But the other side of that coin is that the Eagles had 27 third down conversions, which is awesome. And they had 3 4 down conversions, awesome. They shouldn't have needed 30 third and fourth downs, right? Like they controlled the ball a lot more than the Chiefs. They had the ball a lot more, but if they need a big third down play, particularly a big third down pass on these like third and 12, third and 14 situations to keep their offense on the field, that's not a sustainable game plan. Like, of course, in the second half, things were going to start to turn the Chiefs' way, because the Eagles, in order to kind of dominate that first half, needed to convert all those third downs. And I just don't think that they could have kept that up for four quarters. And that's kind of what happened.
Now, and I'm not sure, I know you do listen to the show, but you might not have heard every word this morning. You know, I had to open, of course. I mean, everyone knows, you know, how tied on I am with the Birds. Although I, as I said, for 2 weeks, I just to have them in the last game of the year was a nice treat, and this season exceeded expectation. But I also had to say, Dave, that I had to trot out my favorite only in racing comparison, which is how do you make your two best teams, quote unquote, play a championship game on a field in that condition?
Yeah.
And then this officiating situation with them is not going to get better unless they have a comprehensive, I mean, I almost called him Rizal.
Goodell.
For Goodell to be standing there saying that the quality of their officiating has never been better, and with a straight face, it is just laughable. And I maintain you've got countless retired football players whose careers were cut short or who were just shy of being NFL quality that are premier athletes, but keep trotting out these 58-year-old accountants once a week that can't keep up, that are it's an embarrassment.
It's also it's a strange situation where you have officials on the field and then you have officials in an office in Park Avenue who are watching the game and watching their views, who can overturn calls on the field. Why don't you just create one one system? You know what I mean? Like, I also think that, like, we should just decide, are we going to let, you know, officials decide, determine this stuff on video review, or are we going to let the refs call it on the field? I mean, it's to me, that seems like a weird dichotomy that they've set up for themselves in the NFL that I don't understand. And then all the sort of weird rules around when something is reviewable and when it isn't. I don't understand the purpose of these. It just feels like so much litigation and so many layers of rules that ruin the game.
Well, with about 3 minutes to put a big bow on this, and I'll reiterate just how wonderful the season has been with you. You've made, you know, the whole NFL season that much more fun for me and for our audience. A couple of different questions. One, any key learning that is sort of permeating your thoughts here the morning after, you know, season long or Super Bowl specific? And what's next for Dave Hill?
I learned a lot this season. I learned a lot about, you know, how to think about the market and analyze the market. You know, those of us who bet on horses and, you know, horse parimutuel betting is just such a different beast than betting into these fixed odds markets. And so I had to learn a lot about timing it and thinking about market moves and how to interpret them. So that had nothing to do with learning about football. So that was a pretty cool sort of side effect of doing this job this season. And I feel like it won me quite a bit of money, and I hope that I can, you know, keep that up season to season, and that those results aren't an anomaly. I don't know what I'm going to do next. Yeah, I'm going to be writing for a while for the World Poker Tour. They got me writing some stuff for them. So my goal there is not just to write about poker players playing poker, but hopefully to write about, you know, gambling topics and other topics that might be interesting to people, to their audience, but they aren't necessarily what they usually see. So I'll be writing there for a while this year as well. And then all the usual places, and hopefully some unusual places. I'm hoping, you know, I'm for hire. I eat what I kill. So I will write wherever people want to pay me to write. Hopefully you'll see me in some new places.
And what about a new season of Gamblers?
Well, I don't know that we'll see one this year. You know, the last season of Gamblers took over a year to put together, right? So at some point we'll start talking about what the next season will look like, and then we'll have to actually start recording it and producing it. So I don't know that you should look for that anytime soon. But at some point we will do a season 3 of Gamblers. And so I'm always looking for ideas for topics and people to talk about there. So if anybody wants to put a bug in my ear about somebody they know, hit me up on Twitter. My DMs are open.
Well, and of course, the vapors. Any new developments regarding theatrical adaptations?
Well, I'm hopeful that we'll see some We'll have some news report on that maybe next month, but I don't yet know. I've got my fingers crossed, but there's a lot of weird stuff behind the scenes going on that I'll know more about. Can say more about maybe next month.
Very good. Well, I in the meantime, I've got at least a week to try to figure out a way to come up with a topic that'll produce a new Dave Hill segment, because people, they're going to go into withdrawal. Although maybe it's good, David. Maybe let them build up a new appetite for the next
Don't give
David
them too
Hill.
Much. Right. Don't give them too much.
Well, I
really appreciate you having me on this season. It's been a lot of fun, Steve. I appreciate the offer, and I hope I get to do it again soon.
Without fail, and incredibly generous and always fascinating. Dave Hill, everybody. Dave Hill 77 on your Twitter and everywhere smart editor publishers produce content, you'll find Dave Hill. Dave, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye, everybody.
I love it. Dave Hill, he's just unbelievable. What a fun morning. Dave Hill, John White, Ed Mosier, Richard Migliori, and Doolittle. Don Little Jr., the Monday edition of At the Races. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, here on Sirius XM. Back with the Tuesday show, which will include Brad Cox and Andy Serling, and much, much more. and the Valentine's Day edition. It'll be a love fest. Wah, wah. Thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoyed. Replay later and archive podcast, etc. from the website. And I'll talk to you in the morning.
Right. The angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania.